Blog Talk Radio.
And I won't be made to ever feel ashamed that I'm American made. I got American parts, got American faith. In America it's hard. Go on, raise the flag. I got
good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Assignment America Radio Show. I'm your host, Betty Kilbride. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and I've been saying it for a long time now. We seem to be in an upside-down world where everything just seems to be cracking at the seams. You know, we've got moronic idiots in the media lying about their time in Iraq. Brian Williams, for example, lies, you know, mount up to the point where now he's got military personnel, pilots and individuals lying about his lie, claiming to be involved with him. That entire story seems to be cracking at the seams as he, you know, as Brian Williams decides to, you know, continue with his little perpetual lies. Okay, he did an apology. Yeah, right, okay. Did his little apology, and then now, just in the last 48 hours, you know, a pilot claimed to be, you know, the pilot of the helicopter that, you know, was taking on small arms fire while Brian Williams was in the bird with him. Then he retracted it yesterday. You know, it's pretty bad, ladies and gentlemen. It truly is. Makes a mockery of the military. Makes military personnel to be liars, perpetuating the lies. When journalists decide to lie, that really pisses me off. Then you got the attack over in Copenhagen. You know, people were killed. You got mosques being burned down in Houston. ISIS, you know, rising power, you know, their power is rising all across the Middle East to the point where it is now becoming the game. And the game chess, the game of war, created back in Persia many, many moons ago to strategize war effort against an enemy, is coming into play. Let's go back and think about this, ladies and gentlemen. When America and NATO forces were in Iraq and Afghanistan, where were the neighboring countries' leaders when this was all going on? When we were fighting, you know, terrorism on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan, they were sitting silently by on the sidelines, silent while Al-Qaeda and their little minions terrorized, tortured, and murdered thousands. Now ISIS has emerged even more so, killing, torturing, and beheading, and burning people alive on video. Now everyone seems to be outraged. Libya, just this weekend, in Libya, 21 Egyptian Christians were beheaded on video. Egypt now is irate, bombing over in Libya. ISIS group outside of the core territory of Syria and Iraq seems to be pushing their little videos. Now, a lot of these videos, we don't know if whether or not they were filmed in December or January, but we do know that the videos are getting worse and worse and worse. Everybody says, oh my God, you know, the Jordanian bombing killed an American journalist. She's lucky that she was killed by bombings and not burned alive by ISIS. Because let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, if they would have wound up burning her alive, America would have erupted. That's what they want, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they're taking over Libya. Now we've got the Italians freaking out on the other side of the Mediterranean. Oh, my God, they're only 200 miles away from the European doorstep. That's their plan, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I've been going back and forth for the last couple of weeks. I heard about President Obama's speech, the National Prayer speech, at the National Prayer Breakfast, and I really didn't pay too much attention. I listened to it here and there, but I didn't actually go in and look at it. I did in the last few days. And then I meditated over it. Did a lot of painting this weekend. For those who don't know, I've been getting into a lot of painting again. And while I was painting, I was actually kind of meditating and thinking about everything that's been going on in the world. And in between, I wound up, sending out messages to a few friends of mine around the world who I call upon because they are the experts. I'm good at putting the dots together, but they truly are the experts because they watch this stuff daily. And that's their job. They're part of the Home Office over in London. They're MI6, they're MI5, they're, Interpol counterterrorism experts from around the world. One of them sent me an article yesterday that was written for the Huffington Post. Very interesting article, ladies and gentlemen, because everything that the dots have been being put together in my mind, historically, based on what President Obama had said and his little mention about the Crusades, it didn't make sense to me at the time when I heard that he had made a comment about the Crusades. It didn't make any sense to me as to why he would mention that. But everything fell into place last night when I sat down and read this particular article. I'm going to read a majority of this article to you because, honestly, it's probably the best written piece of journalism that I have read in a very long time because it throws in historical, current day, counterterrorism, understanding of what's been going on around the world, the implications, the regional implications, as well as the worldwide stage. It's all about the great game, ladies and gentlemen. If you know anything about history, the great game is all about that chess game. It's not only about politics. It's about revenge. The article itself is titled, "Is Jordan Facilitating ISIS Grand Strategy?" It was written by Alistair Crook. He's a former MI6 agent, and he's also the author of Resistance, The Essence of Islamic Revolution. You know, before I start reading this, let me tell you, when I studied the Middle East before I went to Iraq, I took a lot of notes, actually 6 spiral notebooks worth, the thick one, the 5 subject one. After reading this article last night, I went back and went over my notes. And honestly, I don't find anything wrong in this particular article. Here's what he says. This is what Crook says. Beirut, last September, Crook wrote that nothing that ISIS has done has been whimsical. Rather, it reflects serious planning and intention. A map of ISIS' intended conquest of territory with its oil wells all carefully marked out dates back to 2006. Strategy for taking Mosul was more than 2 years in its incubation. ISIS' horrific burning of a caged lieutenant, the Jordanian pilot, will have been done in full understanding of the emotional impact of the manner of his death on Jordanians and in the West. This was very deliberate, not some spur-of-the-moment act of barbarism. It is important to understand what lies behind and beyond the event itself. As Crook explains last year, when he cited an article by the Lebanese paper Al-Akbar on the topic of Hadith, which is the saying attributed to the Prophet Muhammad, asserts that the long-awaited hour of resurrection will not arrive for believers until after the Byzantines have landed in southern Turkey and a Syrian village located north of Alepo. Indeed, there is a conviction that is widely held across desperate sex in the Middle East today, that the foretold signs prefiguring the coming of the redemption are evident in a contemporary world event. ISIS followers take their understanding of the Dabaq saying, which is Dabaq is the Syrian village, by the prophet, to mean that the great battle will take place between the Crusader West and Islam. Think about that word, Crusader, ladies and gentlemen. And that this struggle has been made imminent by ISIS declaration of the caliph. Now, for ISIS, the term Byzantine is held to stand for today's Crusader West and its accolades. Islamic State fighters assert that the epic War of the Cross will unfold with a Crusader strike on them inside Syria, but that ultimately the forces of Islam will prevail, as the prophet foretold, and that coming of the Redeemer will then ensue. ISIS will act with intention. The Islamic State takes this hadith literally as a biblical prophecy, which it would hope to see materialize literally. And if this were to occur, in its own view, it would signal to the world that ISIS truly stands as the end of the world caliph and the beginning of a long foretold redemption of the world. But for the prophecy to be actualized, ISIS needs the creator forces, American and coalition boots, to be on the ground, and for these forces to be visibly defeated as a proof of ISIS' divine guidance. The latter before, therefore, needs to be preserved, persevered through the coalition airstrike sufficiently intact to signal, firstly, the air attacks ineffective. Secondly, to leave the West with no other option but to put boots on the ground. Does that not sound like what's going on right now, ladies and gentlemen? He's very much on target here, isn't he? If the article continues, in 2006, Hezbollah similarly dug itself in up to the point of 40 meters deep during the Israeli air bombardment of southern Lebanon, only to emerge to continue its rocket attacks on Israel, to the point where Israel thought it had no alternative but to commit the Israeli army to an invasion of southern Lebanon in order to surpass the attacks and suppress them. But with boots deployed on the ground, the Israelis inevitably experienced serious casualties. President Obama's recent request to Congress to allow for the limited use of American troops, ground troops, forces in Iraq and Syria, indicates that ISIS strategy has at last had partial success. President Obama's recent request also is provoking this reaction with precisely its own intent in making the Jordanian pilot's death such a carefully staged, dramatized, and filmed horror show. Since the beginning of these deliberate provocations, ISIS has been, so far correctly, adamant that U.S. airstrikes would not bring about the Islamic State's defeat, but rather the reverse. In interviews with Al Akbar, ISIS sources speak of a strategy of resistance that the Crusaders have no capacity for. And say, and you know, what they also say is the mere persistence of IS and its survival after the airstrikes definitely mean victory. According to Al-Akbar, this opinion is shared by most IS members and their believers. They believe standing up to an alliance of 40 states without resulting in the utter defeat to the rest of the world will mean that the divine power stands with them. Does this not sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? It's exactly what's happening. So why was Jordan actually the target? Here's what he says. So not only has ISIS prompted President Obama into putting American boots on the ground, but the killing of the pilot has also provoked Jordan into attacking ISIS. In the latter's view, thereby given evidence that Jordan is little more than a front line of the Crusader's fear. And in fact, a Crusader state too. More than this, prominent commentators in the Saudi press are urging for what has likely been discussed privately, a Jordanian military ground operation against ISIS in Syrian territory. Should this occur, it would lead credence to the prophecy in the eyes of many Muslims. But the second reason for the Jordanian provocation lies with the latter's potential vulnerability to domestic polarization and civil turmoil. ISIS makes plain by its own very name, Islamic State in Asham, or Greater Syria, that it lays claim to Jordan as part of the caliph. Jordan originally formed a part of its own Asham. Now, the gruesome manner of the pilot's death in classic revolutionary polarization strategy outrage authority and provoke it into heavy-handed overreaction that is directed against ISIS sympathizers. And what were just sympathizers will metamorphose from passive into committed insurgents. Jordan's constant and consistent to be the third biggest component within ISIS, estimated now at over 3,000. The taproot into ISIS lies squarely in Amman's distressed industrial suburbs, from which Zakawi actually comes from. Well before the Iraq War, notably, Jordanians also dominated Nashra, which was another forefront in the fight. In the first edition of ISIS magazine, the authors assert that it was al-Zarqawi who paved the way for the Islamic State to become what they are today. The gruesome manner outraged authority again. But there is another important dimension to this. Beyond igniting Jordan as auxiliary territory to ISIS' existing field of war, and one which has always been a part of the group's initial strategy, ISIS differs from al-Qaeda in a number of ways, but particularly in respect to the ordering of conflict. Now, al-Qaeda was just one little strong arm. ISIS is very well educated. They have studied the war. They studied the Crusades. They have a retribution against anyone associated with the Crusades from thousands of years ago, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a crusade locally, currently. This is a thousand-year war waiting to erupt. Al-Qaeda, by contrast, ordered conflicts, vice versa. To justify this, ISIS leaders rely on the wars of hypocrisy that were initiated by the Caliph Akbar against Muslims who renounced their religion following the death of the Prophet Muhammad, and to critics and opponents of the Caliphate. In short, many Wahhabis, including ISIS, believe that Shia Muslims are more dangerous than Jews, which explains why some jihadists are willing to cooperate with Israel. Abate as a temporary expedient, and why Israel is willing to cooperate with the jihadists themselves. Temporarily and expedient, ISIS view is in substance. They believe that liberating Palestine is irrelevant without the establishment of the caliph in the countries surrounding Palestine first. Sources linked to ISIS told Ali Akbar, the final war that will liberate Palestine will be led by the caliphate, preceded by the establishment of this state, on the basis of saying they attribute to Prophet Muhammad. The sources add, Allah alone knows just how much the soldiers of the caliphate earn for skipping the necessary stages and battle the Jews in Palestine. But he who rushes something before its time comes shall be punished by being denied it. Let me stop here for a second, ladies and gentlemen. I have been saying for many years, these extremists, these militants, these terrorists are patient. Extremely patient. They observe. They watch. They take notes. They go back into history, what worked, what didn't work. They are the most passive individuals this earth has ever seen. Where everyone else is reactive, they are non-reactive. They are patient, methodical. They watch. I mean, it was evident in the first bombing of the Twin Towers what the response was going to be. They watched. They were literally in the Marriott Hotel across the street. They were in four different rooms, partying, watching, staring out the window to what the reaction was. They saw exactly how many first responders showed up. The best way that they can wind up terrorizing and taking out a city is to destroy the first responders. The building that represents the economic stronghold of the world, the economy of the world, which was the Twin Towers. Because 84 different countries were represented in those towers, ladies and gentlemen, in case you've forgotten. It was the financial mecca of the world. In order to take down the economy of the world, they had to take down those buildings. So when they did the first bombing back in the early 90s, they watched, and then they planned. They saw exactly what they wanted, how many responders, how long the response would be, what would take it down. They called upon their engineers, their architects, to plan the perfect takedown of the economy. The economy was doing pretty damn good before 9/11, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, 2001. Since then, it's kind of spiraled downhill, hasn't it? The economy around the entire world. We've had European countries literally gone bankrupt. Greece. Other European financial markets struggling. America in the middle of what they don't want to claim as a depression or a recession, just a downturn in the economy. We got politicians on Capitol Hill that are moronic idiots thinking that unemployment sparks the economy. Yeah, right. Okay, my economics classes in college never showed those. Interesting. But that's what they wound up doing, ladies and gentlemen. But to get back to this article, here's where it comes into play. The second dimension in the strategy, the destabilization of Jordan has been initiated through the act of outrage, but at the political level too. ISIS, their act of aggression, stirs the political contradictions inherent in Jordan's own political posture. On the one hand, more obviously on the onset, Jordan has claimed that it has tried to stay afloat from the conflict within Syria. Syria is a big neighbor with a long memory, which will not forget or forgive acts done against it during this particular war. The Jordanian leaders, too, have a very long past. They have long memories. They appreciated that their own state is far from invulnerable for inflamed radical Islam. But on the other hand, Jordan has been and is financially distressed and has had to seek assistance from Saudi Arabia and the U.S. Under such pressures, Jordan has been invalued into the Saudi-Israeli-U.S. alliance, participating in a joint operation controlling room, managing, for example, the present Syrian jihadist oppositions, push into the southern Syria, which ostensibly is led by Saudi Arabia's supposedly moderate jihadist, fighting in a close cooperation with Israeli-facilitated small arms areas of Al-Qaeda, the official arm in Syria. There is not much evidence, however, that King Abdullah has pushed back against these pressures. Rather, the reverse is happening. In the wake of the horrific killing, the U.S. really wants Jordan to seek more revenge for its pilot's murder against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, and is offering the new $1 billion aid plan as another inducement. So, are we bringing Jordan into this? Why? Why all of a sudden is President Obama willing to support financially Jordan's revenge? That leads a lot of questions, don't you think? The coalition might be well encouraging Jordan down a path that may lead to mobilization of an internal jihadist uprising against the monarchy itself and bringing ISIS closest to Israel. Contradictions inherent in this posture are plain. Jordan cannot afford to have the Syrian government become implacable enemies. But nonetheless, the state has become increasingly entangled with the Saudi-Israeli fight. In the triangle formed where their two borders meet, have been facilitating and giving artillery and rocket cover to Al-Nusra. Saudi Arabia and Israel are still intent on landing a powerful blow on Damascus. Israel has prioritized the strategic alliance with Saudi Arabia above other considerations. In effect, Jordan has now entered the war with ISIS. To stand back somewhat is to see how the combination of two quite distinct and separate events have put the whole region from south of the Latini River in south Lebanon to the Golan Heights, and now down through Jordan to the Red Sea into the state of potential turbulence and conflict. Ladies and gentlemen, is this the beginning of World War III? You know, the Bible says that World War III will basically be started in the Middle East. Everyone thought that World War III was, you know, begun when we went into Iraq and Afghanistan. Nah, that was just a prelude. Now, I'm really starting to wonder if whether or not World War III is actually about to happen. Because now we've got Egypt bombing ISIS over in Libya because of the beheadings. The political pawns, the power play of pawns, you know, the king and the queen and the knights and the rooks are all playing the game. The pawns are the individuals that are being used and killed by ISIS. ISIS is playing the great game. But the problem is, who's going to stop it? That's the major problem here. But see, now let's go back into history here. Go back into history, but also into the national prayer breakfast statements by Obama. And what his intention is now. It's very disturbing, ladies and gentlemen, because the Crusades happened thousands of years ago. The Crusades were all about power, money, bloodshed, religion. They went from Northern Europe by domain from Rome to spread Christianity. The problem was they weren't spreading Christianity. They were conquering. There was a major problem in that area back then. Now, if you turn around and go back into history as to the Byzantine Empire, you know, think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Byzantine. The term Byzantine is held to stand for today's Crusader West and its accolades. ISIS state, Islamic State fighters assert that this epic war of the cross will unfold as the Crusaders strike on them inside Syria. That's their turn for Byzantine. So if you go back into history, the Byzantine Empire was a continuation of the Roman Empire back during the Greek-speaking terms in the Mediterranean. They wound up attacking the Crusades themselves, attacked and destroyed the demise, complete demise of the Seljuk Turks and the Ottoman Turks. Now, if you go look at the Ottoman Empire, it went from Spain all the way over to the other side of Turkey and down. Their fight, they want that land back. They want that power back. The Byzantine was supposed to be a small little area town. It wound up growing based on conquering. Now, this was all Empire Constantine the Great back in 3006 to 3037. That was his reign. Constantinople turned into the Ottoman Empire, you know, because it took over. The East Roman Empire wound up taking over that area. Cultural life changed. Byzantine Empire was quite modern in its day, but its tax system and administration was so efficient that the empire survived more than over 1,000 years. See, you go back into history, ladies and gentlemen, and you start seeing a little bit of a correlation here. The Ottoman Empire conquered the city in 1453. Most times in history, the empire was divided into three different periods of time. You know, Constantinople itself was pretty much 330 until 1453. That's when the Ottoman Empire took over. They want that power back, ladies and gentlemen, and that's exactly what they're pushing for, a little bit at a time. So they're going back and doing retribution for what happened during the Crusades. Currently, they want boots on the ground of all the NATO powers so that they can help annihilate them, divide them, and destroy them. When we go back into President Obama's speech, again, very disturbing. Very disturbing. It bothers me, ladies and gentlemen, that the president of my country would even bring up the Crusades. But when you go back and you start connecting the dots, everybody's wondering if this guy is, you know, a silent Muslim helping to promote Islam, refusing to come out and say, they're terrorists, they're militants, they're murderers. Instead, placates them. Honestly, ladies and gentlemen, the speech for the national prayer breakfast culminates everything I have actually been thinking for a long time. Because why else would he have mentioned or brought up the Crusades? The Crusades is exactly what ISIS is going after. They need the Crusader forces, American and coalition forces. They need their boots on the ground in order to have their divine conquer, their divine victory. This is not BS, ladies and gentlemen. Believe me, I've spent a couple of days on the phone talking to people that are in the know, confirming what I'm seeing. It is interesting to start to connect these dots to what the great game is all about. This is what they're doing. They're playing the great game right now. And unfortunately, certain countries, the powers that be, are falling right into the hands of what they're trying to do. Airstrikes are going to be great. The problem is, and what the experts had told me over the weekend. What's going to happen? They're playing their little waiting game. They're going to do the shock and awe, shock and awe, shock and awe, as much as they possibly can, killing anybody that they can, videotaping it, putting it out to the world. We are in control. We are going to do everything we can to morally destroy you, spiritually destroy you. The evil within them, excuse me, will do everything they possibly can to attack those who represent in their minds the Crusades. Now, when we look at the authority of them in comparison to what the historical ramifications of the Crusades will mean to them, here's what it comes down to, ladies and gentlemen. Strictly, here's what it comes down to. We've seen an immense amount of infiltration, and I'm using that word carefully, the infiltration into every other country of these radical militants. We've got them right here in America. They're being trained our soil, just waiting for the word to attack. This is not BS, ladies and gentlemen. This is not conspiratorially, thought processing here. This is pure observation. When they decide that it is time to show the world, the crusaders of the West, those who are non-believers, when they decide to send the word out in one of their little videos here, guaranteed, mark my words, those who have been dormant and sitting back going, oh, I cannot believe these people are taking over my religion, those individuals will stand up and strike. We've got a German rapper who has moved from Germany, went over into the Middle East, joined forces with ISIS, and is now creating rapper music recruiting videos. That's a little sick in the head. But that's what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. They're slowly, slowly reeling these people in that have the notoriety with the fan bases so that they can turn around, recruit them, brainwash them, make them think like they do, and have them do their dirty work. That's why there's been so many Germans, unfortunately, falling to the wayside. These young, impressionable kids. What the hell are we doing, ladies and gentlemen? We're allowing this young generation to be brainwashed by the ideology of maniacs. Sick individuals who are hell-bent and determined on killing and destroying. They thrive on it. They're narcissists. I mean, they're the kind of people that just, they can't live a day without killing something or someone. That's somebody sick in the head, ladies and gentlemen. That's an insane individual that needs to be incarcerated, that they need to be taken down. They need to be either annihilated themselves or arrested. What's that going to do, though? They're just going to put them into population in the jails for them to spout off their crap, get somebody that's totally even more insane than they are, and convert them to what they believe. To a point, ladies and gentlemen, I am not recommending, mass killing in our jails. But I do believe in the eye for an eye. If you get arrested for killing somebody, every bit of evidence is there. You've got exactly 1 year in incarceration. Your attorneys have 1 year to prove you innocent, come up with evidence that says that you are not the killer. If on the 366th day there is no evidence brought forward, your attorneys and your legal staff cannot bring anything forward, then honestly, save the taxpayers' money. Put you in front of a firing squad, put you in, you know, lethal injection, whatever. The electric chair, I don't care. Take you off the game. You're no longer in the game. You're no longer one of the little minions. You're no longer one of the pawns. You're no longer one of the knights in shining armor for your little cause. You're not even a martyr. You're just an idiot that got caught. Each and every one of these people, if we did that around the world, one, our jails would be pretty much empty. Because if you go back into history, people refuse to wind up doing criminal acts. Well, a lot of them did them, but and they were caught and they were killed. They were either hung, beheaded, whatever, you know, shot, whatever the case may be. We didn't have people living in incarceration for 50, 60 years on taxpayer money. That didn't last that long. They either did their time and got out on parole, lived a healthy life, criminal, you know, crime-free life, or guess what? They were put to death. That's it. Bottom line, done. No, instead now we've got all these bleeding heart liberals out there and right-wing idiots. You know, oh my God, the death penalty. Oh, we can't do the death penalty. Oh my God, that's horrendous. Okay, those are the idiots that claim and complain about paying high taxes. Why are we paying for cable TV in a prison? Why are we paying for the education of prisoners? Oh, that's supposed to be, you know, re-education, you know, reprogramming their mind. Give them an education. They never had that on the outside. No, they have to wind up getting education for free, where you and I have to pay student loan fees and interest on top of interest on top of interest for those student loans. We got to bust our butt every day of the year in order to wind up figuring out how do you wind up paying that $800 a month for your student loans. You know, where it used to be that the payments were a couple of $100 a month so that you could at least survive, pay off the student loans. And if you got a bonus somewhere along the line, take half of that bonus and pay it off the student loan. No, now student loans want your blood. They want your firstborn child and everything that you own. And if you don't pay them, you go to jail. So what's the big deal with that? Go to jail. You can get a PhD probably in jail, and it's free. Maybe we should try that, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe then we'd all wind up coming out with that, you know, post hole digger in the shed. Because that's all your PhD as an incarcerated individual will be worth. But yet, that's what's happening in our jails. The great game, ladies and gentlemen, is pushing this more and more and more. Politicians are pushing this. And until the American people and the world wakes up and sees what's going on like I just did, although I've been suspecting it all along because of the great game research that I have been doing for about 10 years now. It's interesting, isn't it, to see how various countries are being used as political pawns for the agenda of ISIS. This is never going to stop, ladies and gentlemen. ISIS will never go away. Unless the Muslim community starts to retrain and reprogram their own people, there will be young, impressionable kids that are going to be rebellious, who have been listening to the folklore their entire life, that has been handed down by generation, by generation, by generation, by generation, claiming that the Crusades destroyed them. They must have retribution for the Crusades. You know, I have to wonder, you know, and you see it right here in this country. People today wanting retribution, financial assistance, financial payoff for the sins of people in the past. when the mindset of today's people starts to realize the people of today were not back in the 1800s and 1700s. They were not back in 1400. They were not back in 330. They were born and raised today. Why make the people of today suffer for the sins of the past? That's what I don't understand. And I probably never will understand that. And I'll take that misunderstanding and that lack of understanding to my grave one day. Not right now, but one day. And maybe then the man upstairs will turn around and go, Betty, this is the reason why. Didn't make sense to him either. And it never should have happened. But the devil does take over and keeps pushing those little stories and folklore of destruction, of slavery, of murders, of the Crusades, all of that. You know, people of today should not be paying the price for people in the past and their transgressions. People just need to let go of the past to a point and say, you know, my neighbor who's white, purple, green, or orange, or black, it doesn't matter, did not cause the atrocities of the past. So why should I blame them? Why should I hold them accountable for the crap that the lazy people in my life are perpetuating? Duh! The people that don't want to go out and find a job, that want to wind up being on welfare and, you know, social services and all of that kind of crap. Oh, well, the man hurt me, the man killed me, the man destroyed everything in my past, so therefore I have to wind up sitting on my butt and not doing a damn thing. Oh, the people of the Crusades destroyed the Ottoman Empire. They destroyed everything. We have to have retribution. Jesus. When are people going to wake up and smell the coffee? When are people going to realize somebody else is pushing these agendas? But who? Politicians? Political leaders? Moronic idiots? Insane individuals? People who just don't give a damn about humanity? But have a narcissistic capability, they have to be in the limelight. They have to be able to say, ooh, I stirred that pot. Ooh, I stirred that pot to the point that I just had somebody murdered. Ooh, 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 I'm getting a rush. That's sick in the head, ladies and gentlemen. Absolute insanity. And until people wind up realizing that, and these young people stop following these idiots, I mean, what's next? Another, you know, Johannesburg, or Johannesburg, whatever the heck it was. What's next? Is an entire field of people going to stand out there in the middle of the field with this little Kool-Aid that's got some kind of chemical in it, and they all suck it down in one shot, and they all die? Is that what it's going to come down to? Before somebody wakes up and smells the coffee and goes, whoa, back up and regroup here. That's what it's going to come down to, ladies and gentlemen. Mark my words. You know, unfortunately, 21 Coptic Christians lost their lives this week. Jordanian Pilate lost his life. And the reaction to both of those situations is exactly what ISIS wants. Airstrikes. Killing more innocent people. Because you know there's always going to be innocent casualties in and around them. Because they surround themselves. They're such cowards that they surround themselves with innocent victims. Now they want boots on the ground. Syria, Libya. And once they do that, that's when they're going to go across the Mediterranean. Because remember, ladies and gentlemen, coalition forces, when they left, They left a small contingency of people to train the Afghani and the Iraqi forces. We left. We, the taxpayers of America, and all the coalition forces, we left our equipment there. Whose equipment do you think ISIS is using? Not their own. We left LAVs. We left Jeeps. We left vehicles. We left all of that. And as soon as we left and turned our back, that stuff was given over under the auspice of being taken by Al-Qaeda and ISIS. No, it was given to them. Everything was given to them. We were used as political pawns to hand them exactly the equipment that they needed to play their little game. We need to change that strategy, ladies and gentlemen. We either need to wind up blowing up the equipment that we can't take home and leave the rubble for them to piece together, or don't believe it at all. Just bring it back. We could wind up using it again, guaranteed. Why write that off as, you know, a loss? Taxpayers' money paid for that. Bring it home. Put it on board ship and bring it home. I'm waiting for a Navy ship to be taken by ISIS so that they will have their Navy to help move them across the Mediterranean to the boot of Europe, Italy. Italy right now is standing up their own armies in preparation. Countries throughout Europe should be setting up their own armies and getting them very well recruited and trained in preparation for World War III. I'm hoping that World War III does not happen, but the writing seems to be on the wall. These people want a World War III. They want it so much they can taste it. They're having orgasms over contemplating it. I don't mean to be crude, ladies and gentlemen, but that's war. That's what idiots that do such like this kind of stuff, is pushing for. Because they get off, literally, they get off sexually on killing people. That's exactly what they're doing. Unfortunately, it's at the cost of lives of our military, coalition forces, NATO forces. We need to stop that. We need to truly stop it, ladies and gentlemen, because if we don't, it's going to be coming right here. It's going to be coming right to our own backyard. You know, a few years ago, I posted up a message. Somebody pointed it out to me yesterday that I had posted up an article and a report about the fact that individuals within CAIR, C-A-I-R, CAIR, were given a guided tour, 2010, guided tour of Langley, CIA headquarters. What happened this weekend? CIA headquarters at Langley went down in lockdown. Why? Was there an attack? You know, we got people being infiltrating our own federal government. You know, we've got people infiltrating the federal government of just about every nation. And we're so politically correct, you know, in our diversity, making sure that we are not harming or insulting anybody. You know, I'm so sick and tired of this diversity crap. Whatever happened to melding into the culture of the country to which you come to? You know, my family came from Ireland. Genealogy shows Scotland and possibly England, too. Because everybody comes from someplace else, and they migrate. Well, guess what? The Italians that immigrated to America back at the turn of the century continued with their culture and their heritage, we'd be speaking Italian. Eating really good food, too. The French, the same way. We've all been speaking French. Those that came over from Ireland, we'd all be speaking Gaelic. Spanish, the same thing. Switzerland. I mean, all these various countries, ladies and gentlemen. America is the melting pot. And I'm going to make this real quick because I'm starting to run out of time here. America is the melting pot. If each and every one of these individuals who came to America for a better life than what they were living in, a home of their own, maybe a farm of their own, each and every one of them came here for a better life. They assimilated into our culture, the American melting pot culture. They kept their heritage. They kept a portion of their culture in order to pass that on in tradition and genealogy-wise to future generations. But each and every one of them that came over here throughout the ages, you know, for the last couple of hundred years, they did not turn around and say, boy, girl, you will turn around and speak only our language and that's it. That's not what they did. What they said was, you learn English. This country has given us an opportunity for a better life. You respect that. You take care of that. You promote that. Somehow or another, in the last 35 years, that thought process has gone out the window. People come here, oh, well, we got to take it over. We got to wind up making it our own. You know, I was in Walmart over the weekend, totally freaking insulted. I'm standing there looking at something. Four of the employees from Walmart, they weren't speaking English. They were speaking a different language. I felt like I was in a different country. I didn't feel like I was in America. You come here, you get a job, try speaking English. Stop insulting the American people. Stop insulting the country to which you came to for a better life. You want to continue speaking your language? Speak it at home. Speak it when you're not on the job. When you're working for an American company, you should be speaking English at all times. If a customer doesn't speak English and speaks your language, that's a different story. Because they're asking you a question about where something is. Don't be being disrespectful. I find that very disrespectful. And I said something to those employees yesterday. And I will be making a complaint to Walmart headquarters in Huntsville, Alabama. Because honestly, this is a bunch of BS. I live in America. I don't live in a foreign country. That kind of crap has got to stop. That's an insult to every American and to the American flag and this country. All right, I just got told to shut up and round out the show. I know. A lot of people are probably agreeing with them. But I just get fired up about this stuff, ladies and gentlemen. It's just so ridiculous that nobody else is seeing the bigger picture of the great game. We have to start looking at it that way. For all those out there wearing the uniform of the United States Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Navy, Merchant Marines, every day you put your uniform on, you make this American humbled and proud to be an American. And I thank you. Thank you for your service. To the politicians in Washington, tread lightly in how you proceed with this ISIS group. Don't be known as the politicians that destroyed the world. Be very careful. Do not play into the game that they're playing. For all the law enforcement out there, firefighters, EMS, first responders up in the Boston area, all the way down, prayers and thoughts are going out to you and for your safety in dealing with the storms that you are dealing with and having to go out and take care of some people. Watch out for each other, please, because you're all important to us. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Assignment America radio show. I'm your host, Betty Kilbride. Follow me on Twitter, ELIZKILBRIDE, or on Facebook under Elizabeth Kilbride. See you all next week.